Welcome, listeners and Patreon subscribers, to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and every show I'm joined by the wonderful, illustrious man from the Western Coast, Mr. Alex Hock. Hello, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, as well as you can be when your entire city is in lockdown because your premier is shit. Okay, so there's the political stuff done. Let's go into this. Now, just before we jump into today's show, a quick reminder to everyone listening that if you aren't subscribed already, please follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. Leave us a review and share this show with your prog-minded friends. This greatly helps us to expand the reach of the show. But we've got some pretty big news from the prog world in this show, and we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. So let's jump straight into it. Hoggy, what do we got? What were we talking about last week that needs a bit of sharpening?
Yeah, so last week we spoke at length about the new Till Lindemann song, and you told me sometime later after the show that there's like a full 25-minute video for this song.
Yeah, there is.
Kicking around on the YouTube. So tell us about that. What's that all about?
Yeah, so it's a 25-minute short film that's been done, and Till has done this for a couple of his songs now, where he's released the video clip for the song that he releases is actually bits and pieces from the actual the short film. It's really, really interesting. It's, you know, in typical Till Lindemann / Rammstein kind of style, it's quite dark. It's quite provocative, actually. And it flies in the face of the actual song itself. Whilst the song is quite tongue-in-cheek, the actual short film is kind of a little bit more about, you know, this guy who's basically going and cleaning house because the kids bullied him when he was at school. It's really interesting. It's well worth a watch. Beautifully shot and quite well executed. So definitely worth going and checking out.
I'm assuming, because I haven't seen this, I'm assuming that somewhere in the middle of this video is where the song kind of comes in.
No, there's no song at all. It's literally just a short film. And then they have the song is – the song's film clip is shots from the short film.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that this short film is then in German, so it sort of looks like the sort of thing that might have been playing on SBS one night, you know.
It's – just give me one sec. Just going to find – there we are. No, that's Ich hasse Kinder. Okay, yeah, cool. No, actually, it's not mostly in German. From what I can understand, it's mostly in Russian.
Really?
Which is really – well, I mean, Till and the rest of the band grew up in Eastern Berlin, which
– they all speak East Russian. Germans, they all learned how to speak Russian at school.
Yes, German and Russian. So really, really interesting. But the last couple of songs – the last two songs I think that he's put out – he has done something similar where he's had, you know, a full big video clip, like a full short movie, and then he's also got the song as well. But yeah, I think from memory, the last two have been set in Russia. So really, really interesting, and definitely worth going and checking it out, because it lends quite a dark tone to the actual song, which, as I mentioned before, is quite tongue in cheek.
Indeed.
Mm.
So, yeah, there we'll throw a link in the show notes to that, and we'll check that out.
Absolutely.
So that finishes up the follow-up for this episode. Now we shall jump into the news. And the big piece of news this week, and probably the biggest piece of prog news so far this year, undoubtedly, comes from the Dream Theater Camp.
Mm-hmm. And I'm keen. I don't know about you, but I'm keen.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be fun.
Dream Theater have confirmed their brand new album, their 15th studio album's track list and title and release date. Now, the album title is going to be A View from the Top of the World. It's going to be out on the 22nd of October this year. And the track listing is as follows. The Alien, Answering the Call, Invisible Monster, Sleeping Giant, Transcending Time, Awaken the Master, and A View from the Top of the World. Now, there are a few little leaks that were getting around before, obviously, the announcement was made yesterday. The artwork that you've seen with the telescope thing with the, you know, the mountains and all that kind of stuff and the birds and all that kind of stuff, that is not the correct album artwork.
I'd like to know where that came from, whether that's just like some fan generated thing or whether it's like a deliberate leak.
I'm not sure. I think it's probably fan art. It was originally posted by someone in who speaks French. So I'm guessing maybe like the French fan club or something like that, from over that way, or one of the countries that does speak generally French, maybe Canadian fan club or something like that. So here's the question. With a title like A View from the Top of the World, what are you expecting from the album? I know Petrucci's running an 8-string in this, which I think is going to be interesting to hear how he does it and whether or not he uses it a lot.
Yeah, I'd probably back like one song or maybe one part of one song or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I think it's probably just going to be like one part of a song that's, you know, something.
He's like, we know how Dream Theater write, okay? We all know this. It's like someone comes in with a riff or a beat or something and then they kind of jam over it. Mm. So I'm betting John's just got an 8-string. He's come up with some riff and he was like, hey, that's kind of cool. Brings it into band rehearsal and go, let's start with this, and then jams around on an 8-string riff for a bit.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that's it. That's the song. Everything else has been done on like a 6 or a 7.
Mm-hmm. I mean, John also writes a lot of the stuff himself at his home studio and programs drums and all that kind of stuff and then gives it to the various members to, you know, put their spin on and so on and so forth. So, I mean, that's a possibility as well. He's come up with some sick shit in his home studio and gone, yeah, okay, this is mad. I suppose the question is, do we think this is going to be like another album like Velocity where, you know, it's going to be that kind of sort of a return to form? Because if you go back and have a look at some of the other stuff that was leaked out through the DT World Instagram, which is an official leak in, you know, quotation marks, the song lengths are very, very interesting. Unlike Distance Over Time, we have quite a few longer songs in this one. There's a song on here that's, you know, about 9.5 minutes. We've got a song on here that's about 20 minutes. So Return of an Epic, which is really cool to see. Another one in here that's like 10 minutes. You know, I'm seeing a lot of similarities with this album with Systematic Chaos, which was, you know, 6 or 7 tracks, quite a bit longer. You know, the first track was about your 10 minute mark, and then you had the next one that was sort of like 4 minutes, and then you had the one after that that was a bit longer as well, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I wonder whether or not this is going to be a really nice hybrid between something like Falling Into Infinity with the name like A View from the Top of the World and some of the later heavier stuff like Systematic Chaos, and they're gonna, like, you know, try and mash those two together. What do you think?
I mean, we saw on the Velocity record where they had like the shorter songs and everything was a little bit more, like, my overarching review for that record has always been like more direct. I just hope they haven't like decided, okay, great, we've done that bit, now we're just going to disappear back out into the noodly bits again and have like an obnoxiously boring orchestra section in the middle of a 20 minute song for no good reason and that sort of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that Dream Theater have always been, up until recently, extremely powerful with. And that was, as I've said in other episodes, you know, where you're listening to a song and then about 11 minutes later you go, well, hang on a second, how do we get here, you know? And then you go back and you listen and you go, oh, that was actually really cool, you know, because it all just seamlessly blends, unlike some of their later stuff where it was, as you say, just obnoxious, you know, orchestra bits in the middle of songs that had no purpose of being there.
Yeah,
I'm hoping it's the former and not the latter for this album.
So do I. So do I. Having said all that, though, what does interest me is the leaking. I mean, I thought that leaking was basically dead now. I mean, I just, like, everything is so locked down and everything's got, like, watermarks on it. So when they do kind of release stuff to people, as we have received in this context, you know, they put, like, to make sure it doesn't end up getting leaked. You know, they do that with, with albums now. You know, you get a link to an album and it's like a specialized link. And so if it ends up somewhere else, they know where to find you.
That's right. Yeah.
And I mean, for
and how they do that's actually really interesting with, you know, basically what they call digital audio watermarks. It's really, really interesting shit. But notwithstanding that, what I want to know is where on earth the leak came from in the first place. Because, I mean, you and I are pretty on the pulse with this kind of stuff, being heads of the fan club of Australia and New Zealand, you know, and then things started to come out as we got further closer to recording this episode, and we've left this right until the last possible moment to record as well. And then there were people confirming things and we're going, hang on a minute, where are you getting this information from? Because we certainly don't have it. And then we're contacting contacts in the US who are close to the band, and they're going, we don't know what this is. We can't confirm anything for you. So we're just curious as to where on earth this shit actually gets leaked out by, and whether or not indeed it's an intentional leak.
Or the other theory, to quote Dr. Gregory House, everybody lies.
Yes.
Everybody, like, if, like, you know, sort of kind of seen the inner workings of Marillion, for example, if, like, if that band is anything like any other band, there are probably 1,000 people who think that they are close personal friends of the band and think they've got, like, the inside word when they actually don't. So, I mean, you could put us in that category as well if you feel like it. I don't really mind. But, you know, there are so many people out there who think they know what's going on or who claim to know what's going on and then talk shit on the internet and suddenly it ends up headline news.
That's right. That's right. So it is interesting. On a side note as well, Dream Theater have not really announced, but Ticketmaster Ticketmaster over in the United States have started putting up shows for late this year in the United States. And in actual fact, the pre-sale for those goes on, if you're part of the Dream Theater fan club, goes on sale. I think it's on sale now for the pre-sale and all that kind of stuff. So,
boy, I wish we knew what was going on with the Australian leg of a tour that was supposed to happen 2 years ago, but...
Well, I mean, here's the reality of it. Yeah, we've got 9% of our country vaccinated, right? Because our leaders completely and utterly shat the bed. In actual fact, as a good friend of mine said the other night, the leaders of Australia didn't just shit the bed and lie in it. They weren't even in the fucking room. So
yeah, in addition to our like hilariously low vaccination rates, also coupling with the fact that as of this taping right now, probably not by the time you hear this, but as of this taping right now, two of the biggest cities in Australia are in lockdown. So how are you supposed to schedule anything when cities are in lockdown, out of lockdown, or in your case, Dave, just in lockdown forever?
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, you can't schedule around that. Although Polaris have a really interesting thing about that, and we'll get onto that in a little bit, and we'll riff on that in a few minutes. But yeah, I mean, you just can't do that. And I want to make it absolutely abundantly clear, we don't know what's going on with the refunds and all that kind of stuff. If you want my advice, get your bank to do a back charge.
Just back charge it, because at this point, like, the promoter hasn't answered any of our emails. We've asked Dream Theater Management. They say, well, we're waiting on local advice from the promoter, which is fair enough.
Yep.
You know, the amount of tours and places, and like, you can't expect the band's management to keep tabs on the particulars of every single situation in all the countries you're planning on touring anytime soon. Like, that's impossible. You're relying on the advice of the local promoters and the health advice in that area. So there's no point yelling at the band about it, because they don't know and they can't possibly be expected to know.
Yes, that's right.
But the promoter just going dark and not answering any of our messages is a bit low, but you get that.
Yeah, absolutely. You do get that, and unfortunately we're in the same boat as you guys. So, you know, we'll see what happens. but yeah, recommendation from us is probably just try and get a back charge happening or something like that. Get yourself that money back. And then when the new one is announced, buy the new tickets. And then see what happens from there.
I did see a comment. I was going to say, I just want to add one little point there. I did see a comment on our Facebook page asking, like, what are we going to get? Are we going to get the new stuff? Are we going to get the record that never came here? And people are still holding out hope that they're going to see Scenes from a Memory performed at live in its entirety. I mean, in order of those three questions, yeah, we're probably going to see the new stuff. We might get some of the other record, and I doubt we're ever going to see Scenes from a Memory performed in its entirety on this tour at all.
Unless they did like two nights in every city, but they wouldn't do that because of the costs. So, you know.
The costs involved and, like, you know, only, I don't know. Even if they did an evening with, I don't think they'd still be able to cover it. Like, even if they did the whole second set of Scenes from a Memory, like, play all the new stuff they want to play, cover the record that we never saw, and then do Scenes from a Memory? Nah, I don't think so. One of those three things is going to get cut, and I think we all know which one it's going to be.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, well, moving on, we've talked enough about Dream Theater now. We'll move on to some new music as well that has actually come out. And this one's been blowing up across the prog sphere for the last little while. The new Coldplay song, Coloratura, I think is how you say it. Coloratura? I don't know. Anyway, that. Have you listened to this one, Hoggy?
I have. And frankly, I can't understand why everyone is so excited about it.
Really? Okay, go on.
The problem is, do you know what this song feels like? This song feels like it probably could have been a lot more progressive than it actually was. Then they took it into the studio, and then the producer and the major record label got involved and said, no, we can't be doing any of that, and chopped out like all the good stuff. It just looks like a long, quote-unquote, progressive song written by committee. And it's about as and it ends up being about as progressive as Tidy Whitey's.
I suppose it depends on where you're from. Okay, that's interesting because, I mean, I actually quite liked the song, to be honest with you. I liked it. I thought it was a mix of, you know, later era Pink Floyd and that Coldplay Britpop thing that they did quite well. I mean, okay, releasing a song that's 10 minute long does not a prog song make.
No. Not even close.
But I actually quite enjoyed it as a track. The question is, with Coldplay now, who unfortunately are on the wane, they're not exactly at their height as they were with like Viva La Vida and all that kind of stuff. Because they're starting to, they're still quite a major band, because they're starting to now throw some stuff into this, are we going to see a lot more people suddenly turning on to things like Pink Floyd, like your Porcupine Tree, you know, the softer era of prog, your Marillion and Yes and Genesis and all that kind of stuff. And are we going to see somewhat of a little bit of a resurgence in these kinds of things? I personally hope so.
Well, I think the thing with bands like Pink Floyd and Genesis, I mean, they are essentially classic rock bands now. I don't think, like, they've moved past that. They are now mentioned in the same breath as, like, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple and Black Sabbath, right? They are classic rock bands now. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
You know, like you said, a 10 minute long song does not a prog song make. So, yeah. I don't know. The bands may start doing some of this sort of stuff, you know, like an album, like sort of, you know, like the old school, the old stuff where you used to have like album orientated rock where it was like, you'd think it never made it to the radio, but you always used to have these longer form pieces.
Yes.
You know, shoot, even Deep Purple did that. You know, there was these longer form pieces that were never really meant for radio play, I guess Stairway to Heaven is kind of the big, and Bohemian Rhapsody, I guess, are like the two biggest examples of that. Long form stuff, never really sort of written with radio in mind, but then became incredibly popular.
I think it'll be interesting to see where this one goes. And I think, honestly, I'm going to keep an eye on this album, because I think it could be an interesting album, to say the least. Whether or not it's going to wind up being a prog album or more of a pop album, or indeed a sort of half weird mishmash of both because the record label and the producers all got involved.
My theory is this, like, this is just the one-off song and the rest of it is going to be pretty much pop. Short,
might be right. Stuff. You may be right. Nonetheless, we will report back on that one. Now, we've also got a new single from Yes, Hoggy. Tell us about that.
Oh, God. I mean, okay, for those of you who listened to the episode that we did with Ben over at Australian Hunger, you'll have probably heard me yell about Yes already and what I think of the current Yes incarnation, that they are essentially a cover band now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're covering, I mean, and this song, the lead-off single off their new record, The Ice Bridge, is essentially that. It's like a really good cover band. The singer is not John Anderson, but he sure does sound like John Anderson. The keyboards sound like they've been lifted from Asia, and Steve Howe sounds like he always does. I mean, if you like that sort of music, if you like Yes, you know, this new version of Yes, which is like a really weird Uncanny Valley cover band version of Yes, you might enjoy this. But for newer fans of prog, I mean, there's nothing here that hasn't been done better and more recently than this, I think. It's not often you'll get me to dump on a particular record, but I just listened to this and I was just like, it's just like a really, like, yeah, Uncanny Valley cover band version, honestly. What about you, Dave? You, you know, have probably come to this with a little bit more fresher ears than I have, given that, you know, I've listened to a whole lot of Yes for a very long time. So what do you think?
I tend to agree with you. I listened to it and the first thing I thought was, well, that's Yes. You know, it was...
Yes, mixed with Asia as well, because there's like the keyboard sounds that have come straight from the 80s, ripped off an Asia record from the early 80s and just plonked in and...
Yeah, I mean, it'll be good. Will it be anything particularly amazing and, you know, hitting...
Groundbreaking?
No, it won't be. Will it sell like hotcakes? Yes, it will. Because Yes fans are
honestly,
notoriously nut jobs.
Yeah, it's like it'll sell to the diehard Yes fans. I'm telling you now, there will be a polarized reaction. There will be some Yes fans who will hate it for various reasons. One, because it doesn't have John Anderson on it. Two, because it doesn't have Rick Wakeman on it. And three, because it just sounds like, my theory is that it just sounds like an Uncanny Valley cover version. And then there will be the other Yes fans who will think it's the greatest thing since Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it'll be interesting to see the reactions to it. I think it'll be a good album. It won't be a bad album. It'll just be, you know.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, the last two Yes records were pretty bad.
But I don't think it'll be bad. Like, I don't think it's going to be, you know, like sound effects of someone shitting in their hand. You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be an album. You know what I mean? Like, which I suppose for a monumental band like Yes is going to be would constitute it being a bad album. But
yeah,
you know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So there's another piece of new music. Now, literally on the day we recorded the last episode, just after we'd wrapped recording it, Steve Hackett announces a new record on Inside Out Music, Surrender of Silence. It will be out September the 10th. Mm-hmm. The lead-off single is called Wing Beats. Yeah. Have you had a chance to listen to this?
I have had a chance to listen to it. It sounds like Steve Hackett. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like Steve Hackett's guitar playing mixed with like African gospel music, essentially.
Yeah, which I don't know.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, like it. But it's not. I don't know. It ain't exactly my cup of tea. It sort of feels a bit shoehorned in there.
What does the guitar playing or the gospel music?
They kind of don't gel.
Yeah, it's either like a guitar, like a really interesting guitar song with gospel music shoehorned in, or like a really interesting African gospel music that just so happens to contain a guitar player.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was just, you know, I don't know. Could it be interesting? Yes. Will I listen to the album? Probably. We'll leave it at that and see what comes out at the end of the day.
Alrighty. So, another piece of news, dear friend of the show, Ro of I Built the Sky, actually sent us an email about this one. And he told us that he is working on a collaboration EP with guitar player Jake Howsam Lowe, He of the Helix Nebula, he of Pliny fame. Mm. They're working on a collaboration EP, which as of this taping as yet is untitled, but it will be out on September the 17th. Mm. I'll be very interested to hear what these two come up with. I mean, two great guitar players getting together to work on some music. I mean, what's not to love?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, Jake is one of, as you mentioned, one of the guitarists from the Helix Nebula, which also the other guitarist in that band was Stephen Taranto. And I mean,
who essentially is like our white whale for this podcast.
I mean, yes, we've
been chasing him for what, 2 years to get him on the show,
something like that. And I mean, they're both nutso guitarists, and Ro is obviously an exceptionally good guitarist as well. So you know, just I think it's going to be a really, really interesting EP, particularly if Jake brings a lot of that Pliny chordal stuff in, which he's probably learnt by being in the Pliny band for quite some time. Not suggesting that he didn't know it, but Pliny has a very specific way of looking at things, so far as all of that is concerned. So the two of them together might actually be, I tell you what, it could be a prog force to be reckoned with, man.
Oh, totally. I'm really looking forward to this. Hopefully we get the boys on the show at some point to have a chat about it.
Because
yeah. I probably would have very little to add to the conversation, but listening to the three of you guys talk guitars would just be excellent.
I don't know. We can lose a whole episode to gear, man. Get away from that.
I don't know. Maybe we could do two episodes. You'll do the episode where you're talking about the EP and working together and talking about how you all work together in lockdown. And then you all could just do a separate episode entirely about gear.
Absolutely.
Just like the three of you in like a big round table about gear.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm always up for that. Gear talk is gear nerdy stuff, is always
interesting. You're all guitar players. I'm sure there's all like conversations about gear and everything you all could have, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
So you had another piece of news here for us, Dave, about a Polaris tour. Well, we hope it's going to be a tour.
Yeah. Polaris, the boys friend of the show, Dan Finari and the boys from Polaris, hello. I know you guys listen, and it's really great to hear you guys chat about the show and so on and so forth. Also, Dan, on a completely different note, Dan is now doing live streaming stuff on Twitch. Go check that out. It's really, really awesome.
What, live stream drumming?
Yeah, live stream drumming.
What, like teaching stuff or?
Teaching stuff in a little bit, yeah, and also just like doing covers and all that kind of stuff. It's actually really, really cool. He did one the other day for his birthday and he was doing that and like making pasta and such. It was really cool.
Cool.
So, yes, they do have a tour coming up. It's the Polaris tour called the Spring Tour. Tickets are on sale at the moment. We'll pop the link in the show notes below. What's really interesting about this is back a couple of minutes ago we were talking about, actually figuring out how to schedule a tour so that it's not too badly affected by lockdown. So what's interesting about this one is that it goes from the 13th to the 23rd of October. It starts in Brisbane and goes Brisbane, Melbourne, Fremantle, Adelaide, Sydney. Want to have a guess as to why they've put Sydney last? And it's not because they're from here.
I was going to say that's exactly why they've done it, because they're from here. They're from Sydney. But like the problem is with this tour, you think, oh, it's really smartly arranged because they're like playing Sydney last and da da da. But they're still like if a border comes down, the tour's gone.
I don't really see the likelihood of that at the moment, to be honest with you. With Delta, well,
that's
it might
because
be
all
a
the borders
bit
are shut anyway.
Well, but that's
you
the
guys
thing.
Are
they're
practically
not. They're
walled
only,
in.
The borders are only shut to New South Wales.
If you're in
Queensland,
the,
you can go anywhere. You're in Victoria, you can go anywhere. South Australia, WA, Northern Territory, Tasmania.
I was going to say, as of this taping right now, the border from Western Australia to Victoria is still closed.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still. Not for very long, though.
Well, no, I don't think so, because they're coming out of restrictions today. So,
yeah,
you know.
Amazing what a short, sharp lockdown can do, isn't it, eh?
Yeah, funny that. Yeah, unlike, you know, fucking retards that run New South Wales. Anyway, so it is going to be...
We've done a magnificent job to skirt around this for the entire show so far.
My God. I just do not get me involved in it, because I will go nuclear on this. So
maybe we could save that for another after show. We could do like the after show to the after show where you just yell about it for 20 minutes and we do that.
Oh, man, it's fucked. So Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting show. If you guys haven't seen Polaris before, I highly recommend going and seeing it. Hoggy, I would recommend you go and get tickets for the one in Frio. I know the music is probably not exactly what you like, but their shows are amazing. It's at Metropolis in Frio, so it'll be a good gig.
I've said it before on this show a couple of times now, where it's like I don't spend a huge amount of time sitting around listening to heavy metal records, but I do enjoy watching them live. Like, not a particularly big fan of listening to Meshuggah records, but I've seen them play every single time they've come to this city, which I think is like three times now. Yeah, they opened a show for Lamb of God. They played a show at Metropolis, and then they've been back since. Yeah, I've seen them play three times.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoy that kind of music, watching it live.
Yeah, that's
right. And also just the sheer mentality of watching Thomas Harker play Bleed is well worth the admission price on its own.
Oh, bloody oath. The concentration level is just obscene.
Oh, God. It's bananas.
It's so good. And,
yeah. If you haven't seen, I think there's a drum video on YouTube. I'll see if I can find it and throw it in the show notes, where he breaks down how that part goes together, and it is bananas.
It is. It's ridiculous. That straight up Hergot like, thing is just. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. It's like 16th note triplets with the feet, and then there's like the china on the beat, and then there's like a snare every third hit or something. It's completely bananas.
Yeah, and I mean the fact that the actual rhythm for it is like that, right? But it's at that speed that's that I can't even do it with my hands. You know what I mean? It's just, oh, man, yeah. It's so good.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's just the drum beat. Then the guitars are doing something else entirely, which is just crazy.
Yeah, it's oh, man, so good. It's so good.
It's probably one of those songs that they spend probably as much time rehearsing as they probably do for everything else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think so anyway. It is interesting too, and a fun tip for everyone. You know, if you've got neighbors that you really hate, just put some speakers out the back and just blast that for like 10 hours. It's fantastic.
It's a great way to drive the rental prices down in your area as well, I think.
Absolutely.
Like, side note to the side note is I read a story on the internet about a guy who used to go in America, used to go outside once a month and fire a gun into the air. And it was all in service of keeping the rental prices down.
Wow. That's
yeah.
I mean, hey, it works.
If people are look, people of the internet, if people are jogging in your suburb, the rent is on its way up. If you start seeing to see people jogging in the streets, the rent is on the way up because it's like an Uber, it's like a hilariously safe neighborhood and your rent is going to just skyrocket.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Like it has in the suburb that I live in.
Yeah, and yet yeah, look, let's not get to dick swinging about, you know, rental prices in your city versus my city, mate, all right?
I know. Like, Sydney rental prices are bananas and ours are starting to go that way as well. But, they're nowhere near as bad as you guys.
And then the people
who live in Hong Kong or London or New York are just laughing at us going, ha-ha, that's cute.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, how did we end up talking about rental prices? And we're supposed to be talking about Polaris.
We were. So Polaris itself, we'll put the show notes, the link in the show notes, rather, to where you can buy the tickets for this show. Wednesday the 13th of October in the TIV in Brisbane. 15th of October, which is a Friday, Reunion Park in Melbourne. Saturday the 16th of October, that's Metropolis in Fremantle. And you never know, we might have an interview coming up at that there. Maybe. We'll see. And then 21st of October, Bridgeway Hotel in Adelaide, and the 23rd of October at the Roundhouse here in Sydney. Of all of those, honestly, probably the Roundhouse is going to be the one to be at.
That'll be packed. So that's not a particularly big gig, is it? I mean, a couple hundred people, perhaps?
Or Roundhouse, Roundhouse is, I think, 600-700, I think.
Yeah, righto. Okay.
So it's pretty big.
Metropolis is about the same. It's like basically a nightclub. So
yeah, Metropolis will be a good one though. I think it'd be intimate enough that it'd be nice. And big enough and wide enough
area to have a proper pit.
That's right. Yeah.
And for us to like stand off to one side and play bounces in the pit because, you know, I'd have no interest in sort of jumping around as a 32-year-old man in the pit anymore. You know, those days are mostly behind me now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you've got something in here as well about Bloodstock Festival.
Yes. So The Bloodstock Festival is from the 11th to the 15th of August. Now, Devin Townsend is headlining this festival. Other such notable bands that are like Creator are also headlining, Judas Priest are headlining. So what Devin Townsend has had to do, by some miracle, he has assembled an entirely British band and British crew for these two dates. And he's playing two nights of this festival, right? And then he's going into a 10-day lockdown in a hotel somewhere in undisclosed location, United Kingdom. Now, that is by far madness, what is happening right now overseas to get gigs done. It's like, okay, right, we're going to put together an entirely British backing band. Then we're going to fly the artist in, put him in lockdown for 10 days in a hotel to make sure he hasn't brought COVID-19 with him, presumably test him beyond all belief. He may or may not be vaccinated already. Don't know. He hasn't said publicly in any place. And then we're going to play a gig. The other part of it is that the festival attendees all have had to have had their vaccinations, I believe.
Good.
They all need to be tested for COVID-19 before they get to the, like, couple of days before the gig. Mm-hmm. So there's several thousand people that need to get COVID tests for. Right. And then they have their card, like a sort of a vaccination passport card thing stamped to say, yes, I've been vaccinated and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very much in the trial phase. I believe they did something similar at Donington Park recently, and that seems to have gone down okay. It hasn't ended up in like some ridiculous super spreader event. But then, you know, on the flip side to that, you've got idiots like, or dickheads like Eric Clapton mouthing off in the comments that he refuses to play to a quote unquote segregated crowd. You know, because if you haven't been vaccinated, you can't go. And I'm like, it's not even like comparing it to segregation and comparing it to like apartheid is fucking ridiculous.
I was talking with the unofficial third host of the show, Josh Batten, Joshua Batten, about this the other day. And he said something along the lines of, you know, that's it. Like, Clapton's done. He's finished. Just give the spot to someone like Bonamassa or Mayer or one of those guys who are the new guard. The old guard is clearly starting, the dementia is starting to seep in, right? And don't get me wrong, I'll be a very sad person when a lot of those old guard eventually pass away and so on and so forth. But I mean, seriously. Oh, I don't think we should, you know, I'm going to refuse to play. Okay, well, fine. Then fuck off and don't play. Like,
here's what's going to happen. If he doesn't want to play the gig, the Royal Albert Hall are just going to turn around and say, okay, fine, you're footing the bill for all the refunds.
Yeah.
If you refuse to play, it's on you and we're going to stick you with the bill. No idea what the bill would be. Could be £500,000 for all I know. Which, I don't know, Eric Clapton's particular financial situation might be chump change or practically his house. I don't know. So, like, it's all good and well for him to turn around and mouth off and say, oh, I'm not playing. Okay, fine, don't play then. Foot the bill.
That's right.
You know, you could pay the £500,000 to play. And just especially for him, it's Eric Clapton. He's played the Royal Albert Hall so many times, he says it's like playing his front room. So it's not like he's losing out on an iconic opportunity to play the Royal Albert Hall. He's done it like 200 times.
But it's also a bit of a slap in the face, right? For all of the artists who have been struggling through, I only assume it's the same overseas and everywhere else as it has been here. I mean, I know people who have given up completely and it's all over. Like their music and their art stream is gone. They've gone and gotten themselves a shit kicker job because it's the only way that they can bring in cash.
Well, yeah.
And they're never going to get back to it. They've sold their instruments and all that kind of stuff. It will take them decades to recover from that. And by then, it's all over.
This has actually happened with Anathema. He has sold the guitar he wrote a record on. He has sold the keyboard that he wrote Weather Systems on. The band is gone.
Yeah.
It's all over. They've had to give up, go back to regular jobs. Ross Jennings has said openly and very publicly that he's had to pick up like photography work to keep the roof over his head.
That's right.
Because, you know, money from the band's income is not particularly great at the moment for various reasons, even though they just put a record out last year. But, you know, he's had to take on other work to keep the band going.
Yep.
We know many people within the industry here in Australia who have done essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
Or in many cases, it was like never the main thing to start with, and it was almost like a side thing.
Yep.
So they're basically just like, okay, we're going to put that one to bed for a minute and we're going to go off back to our main jobs in IT or whatever. Right?
Even some pretty major prog bands here, and I'm not going to say who, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, guitarists and singers and such from pretty major prog bands here in Australia have had to go and get other work to, you know, keep food on the table for their kids and so on and so forth. So it's a massive, massive slap in the face to the artists who have been struggling through this whole thing. Now we're looking like we're starting to get out of it. You know, the United States is opening up. Australia was in a great place to open up until Morrison and co. shat the bed. Actually, no, shat the living room floor. then, you know, UK, Europe and so on and so forth, they're all starting to open up and everything like that. Things are starting to get back to a semblance of normality because people are vaccinated and they're starting to have vaccines and all that sort of stuff. And to protect those people, the government and the issuing bodies and so on and so forth are saying, well, look, if you want to go to a gig, that's totally fine, but be fucking vaccinated before you go, right?
And also as well, the vaccination is there to protect the people who legitimately, for whatever reason, cannot get vaccinated. I'm not talking about the crackpots and that who don't want to get vaccinated that's for right. stupid bullshit reasons like they think Bill Gates is putting microchips in it or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, I have literally run into a person who actually said that to me, so I'm not just spouting crap like memes from the internet. People actually believe that. There are people who legitimately, for many medical reasons that are 100% legit and valid, cannot be vaccinated. The whole point of the vaccination is to mostly protect those people.
That's right.
And people in this context who are too young to be vaccinated.
That's right.
Like they're only issuing vaccines to people over the age of 16 at the moment in many places. Not yes. here in this country, in other places.
Yes, that's right.
So for those artists, as you're saying, for those artists to then turn around and basically say, I'm not playing because I don't think it's correct that people should be forced to get vaccinated, go to hell.
That's right. It's a slap in the
Good
face.
Good on you for having the privilege, the immense privilege to turn around and say, I'm not going to play. When
That's
many
right.
people would chew their left arm off to go and play at the Royal Albert Hall to a paying crowd of many thousands.
Yeah, I tell you what, Eric, here's a challenge for you. I will fly over there and I'll take your spot. No problems. I got no issues with it. I got no problems with playing to a segregated crowd. You know, I hope you can hear the air quotes there. You know, of people who have been vaccinated and done the smart thing and the right thing by everybody else. It really pisses me off. So anyway, but you know what? If you are going to go to a concert, whether it's this Polaris one or whether or not it's, you know, Eric Clapton or whether, even if you're going to go to an event, you know, doing an anti-vaxxer rally or something like that and going to go beat up a police horse or something like that.
Oh, God. We're doing a marvelous job of scouting around it this week, aren't we?
Just do yourself a favor and make sure you are wearing adequate ear protection. And the reason I mention that is because this episode of the 9-8 podcast is proudly brought to you by Flair Audio. Now, Hoggy, you've had some experience. We've both had some pretty damn good experience with the Flair Audio stuff. Tell us about yours.
Absolutely. Now, I've been using the Flair Audio Isolate earplugs for years. My wife actually bought me a pair on the original Kickstarter campaign for Christmas one year, and I've used them at every single live gig I've ever been to from then. They are super comfortable to have in your ears. I mean, to give you a perspective of that, I have had these earplugs in my ears for three entire days of a festival that I went to in Madrid, the Mad Cool Festival. 9 hours a day, and the last day was actually 12 hours. I had them in for the whole day because there was always music playing around. It was always really loud, and I'm just like, I'm putting these things in. I have hereditary tinnitus. I've had it ever since I can remember. My mother also has it. And so I've always worn earplugs at gigs. For the longest time, it was always foam ones, but then my wife sent me these ones and I've used them ever since. They're really, really comfortable. They block everything out, but they also it's mostly blocking out the sort of reverby parts. It still provides, it's super clear. You can still hear everything. It's not muffled at all. And the bit that I like in particular is that they sell a special cord that goes around the end of the earplug. So you can take them in and out and sort of leave them around your neck if you're sort of stepping in and out of gigs or moving between venues. Very important for me because I have lost many an earplug in the pit or trying to dig them out of my pockets, all this sort of thing. For the best hearing protection and the most comfortable hearing protection going around, check out their awesome range by clicking the link in our show notes below. Now, that brings us to the end of the news. Now we're going to talk about a main topic that came to me a little while ago when I was looking at some new releases that are coming out. I mean, there are so many bands now that are signed to Inside Out Music. Inside Out Music is really hoovering up literally all the prog bands. I mean, aside from the 100% totally independent people in the world, you know, your Marillions, your Pendragons, Anubis, Towhider, etc., local ones signed to either Wild Thing Records or the Birds Robe Collective, I can't think of a prog band, like a major prog band that isn't signed to Inside Out Music. And so the question that I wanted to pose as like a main topic for today is being signed to a major record label back in favour? I mean, I think it is, but not because of the radio airplay, because frankly, who gives a shit about radio airplay? They're not playing prog music anyway, so, you know, who cares? But there are certain advantages in terms of like search engine optimization. You're taking advantage of their larger social media presence, much larger than any social media presence you're probably going to achieve as a band, and their marketing budgets to sort of target those ads and those get into those playlists and do that sort of thing.
I think it's been a really very, very smart two-pronged approach by the industry. I think they've marketed themselves not as a major record label, despite having pretty major fucking artists on their label, right? So take Inside Out, right? You've got Anderson Stolt, Caligula's Horse, Big Elf, you know, Devin Townsend, Dream Theater, Haken, Frost, you know, Kansas, Carnival, you know, obviously.
Wait, Carnival are Inside Out now?
Mm-hmm. Liquid Tension Experiment, Pain of Salvation, Mors Portnoy, most of the stuff that, that they do. You know, there's a lot of major guys. Riverside, I think, are on there as well. Steve Hackett definitely is.
Yes, and Jethro Tull are both now signed to Inside Out Music. Yep. That is a recent sort of signings to the Inside Out Music stable, I guess you'd call it.
The Sea Within, Transatlantic, yes, Tim Bowness. These are all, they're not small-time artists, right? Even some of the smaller ones, like End You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead and, you know, Enchant and so on and so forth, although they're not tiny, but they're not, you know, Jacko Jacksick, I'm pretty sure, is on their roster as well.
He is, yeah.
So what they've done is they've managed to market themselves as a small indie, in quotation marks, label, but they're not. They're a major label. Now, here's the part that I find interesting. Major labels previously in the world of music production and music recording in the industry have been all about money, because that's what business runs around, but also making sure that those artists are making money for them. Right? I think Inside Out and a lot of the indie labels nowadays, what they do is they represent a particular genre extremely well. They have one thing. So instead of having, you know, like Sony, for example, who has the likes of Tool and Taylor Swift on its catalog, they do one thing and they do prog. In this particular case, Inside Out, they do prog and they do prog extremely well. And not only is it a case that if they're signed to Inside Out, holy shit, they're signed to Inside Out, they must be good, right? Because Inside Out says they're good, so they must be good. But it's also a case that the bigger labels are the ones that are still dealing with the likes of, you know, radio play and the big interviews on TV and all that kind of stuff, you know, getting people on the Today Show and all that sort of shit. Whereas these guys, because it's more a niche thing, they can actually just focus on the stuff that realistically at the end of the day is the stuff that gets people known and makes people money. Your plays, your synchronization rights, and the live music side of things. So I think what they've done is actually really smart. They've made themselves a indie label, even though they're not really.
Well, yeah, it's a Sony imprint. I mean, that at the end of the day, it's a Sony imprint. Ooh. So, you know, I mean, this isn't necessarily a new thing. I mean, for the longest time, Def Jam Records exclusively dealt with rap and hip hop and stuff. That was like an imprint of Universal.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing to remember as well is that there are three major record labels left.
Yes.
It's like Sony, Warner Music Group, and Universal. Is that the third one?
Yeah, I think Universal, because it's one of the two that amalgamated, and I can never remember which one it was that amalgamated.
Sony and EMI.
It's Sony and EMI, was it? Okay, so Sony and EMI, Universal, and Warner. They're the three big ones that are left. Yeah.
Yeah. Sony, BMG, Universal, Warner. I think maybe EMI was bought by Warner. I don't know. EMI was bought by someone.
I think what they've done is extremely good. And I think a lot of artists are recognizing that when you have a particularly specialized approach, you know, as you rightly said at the start there, you know, advantages in SEO. social media presence, marketing. They have entire teams that are based around doing just those things for these particular artists in this particular genre.
Which, right? If we're honest, were probably the same departments that were dealing with like trying to get stuff into radio, onto radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now it's sort of pivoting towards like, now it's more pivoted towards like, you know, YouTube, like, you know, getting stuff on social media and dealing with Spotify and dealing with all that stuff.
Yeah, and getting them on the Spotify playlists and things like that, you know, and maybe getting on, I don't know, one Triple J show or, you know, RTM or something like that. I don't know.
RTR FM, you mean?
RTR FM, my apologies.
But what I was going to say is there's probably also a lot of, you know, it's still in America, a lot of like college radio sort of stuff that still goes on.
Yeah, and there's quite even a lot of those, stuff that can be done with
all
that
those college radio stations now are all owned by like Clear Channel or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing as well. College radio over in the United States or, you know, smaller radio networks through Europe. I mean, the fact of the matter is here in Australia, we have like, I don't know, five major radio stations, right?
And yeah, how does it go? It goes Southern Star, Ausstereo. You've got whoever owns Triple M, although I think that is Southern Star, Ausstereo.
Yeah, that's Southern Star.
Yeah, so, okay, who else have we got then besides Southern Star, Ausstereo?
So we've got Nova.
I thought that was Southern Star, Ausstereo as well.
I don't know if you guys have Nova over there.
Nah, they're gone. We had one here for a while, they're gone now.
So here in Sydney, we have... The Edge 96.1, Nova 96.9, WSFM.
You got Triple M.
Triple M. 104.1, which is Today FM. 106.5. And then we've got Triple J. So there's seven.
Where's Kiss FM? What's that shitty one that fucking Carl Sandlands is on?
That's 104.1.
Oh, is it?
Kiss is 106.5. Kiss is 106.5, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's six, right? And realistically, you could probably take The Edge off there and Triple J's national. So, you know, you've got five independent radio stations there.
And I wouldn't even describe them as independent because Triple M is also here in this country.
Well, yeah, exactly.
In this state. I just called it a separate country because it almost is at some point. But
all of those are in the various areas. Right, you've got a WSFM in Melbourne. You've got a WSFM in Brisbane. You've got one in Perth. I don't think it's called WSFM, but you've got one over there, right? So these are the major national radio stations. And then beyond that, we've got a lot of smaller community stations that are in and around. You know, here in Sydney, we've got 2SER, we've got FBI Radio, you know, 2NBC, North Shore Radio, 2SSR, the Sutherland Shire guys. You know, there's quite a lot that are in and around. So the smaller radio stations are probably the ones that are going to be likely to pick up bands like Caligula's Horse because they have a metal show that goes for 2 hours at midnight on a fucking Tuesday, right? The bigger ones are not going to be likely to do that because, let's be honest, they play boomer rock.
Or top 40.
Or top 40, that's right.
Boomer rock or top 40.
You know, it's like Smooth FM, Buble for 8 hours a day.
Yeah, boomer rock. It's still boomer rock, right? You got your classic rock. They play like Jimmy Barnes and AC/DC. They play Michael Bublé or they're playing top 40 stuff.
That's right, yeah. At the end of the day, I think what they've done is actually really smart from a marketing point of view, not just for the bands but obviously for the brand of the label itself. And there's a lot of different labels around that are doing that. I mean, Big Machine Records did it with a lot of country artists over in the US. They're an imprint of Sony. There's a lot of others that I can't name off the top of my head right now.
I imagine there's a few jazz record labels as well that do this. We're really, really big in like the New York jazz scene and we put out all the records. So we do that. And then there's one in UK. There's like a really, really interesting emerging jazz scene in Glasgow that is like mostly independent guys putting records out and doing stuff on Bandcamp. It's really, really interesting. But I'd imagine that some record labels looking over there going, oh, you know, we can do some stuff and like put it out in places, you know?
So, I mean, it's interesting, right? And I think you're right when you say they're hoovering up all the good prog bands, right? It is really interesting to see that they're doing that. Because obviously they're onto something and they're hoovering them up because they know that there is a market there. And let's be honest, Inside Out have basically got cornered.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're like, it's like them, K-Scope, and like Burning Shed are probably like the three big ones. Roadrunner used to have all the prog bands, but you'll have noticed that they practically all left at the same time.
Yes. They all left around about the same time, because I'm guessing that's when their contracts ended, and they all went basically Inside Out.
And yeah, but I'm assuming that Inside Out was like, right, we want to establish ourselves as like the prog label. And so they basically went around and poached all the big ones from Roadrunner, offering them better deals or more independence or whatever. Presumably more independence, I would have thought.
Yes. Yeah. I'm guessing one of the reasons... See, here's the other part of the day. Yep. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, because the other part of like major record label stuff now is I think that, especially with Inside Out, maybe with other record labels, but especially with it, it's like I think they're giving the bands that independence. Like people think back to like major record labels. You have some fucking A&R guy you've got to go and deliver the record to, and he says it's shit and we need more singles or whatever. Back in the studio you go. Yeah. You don't get that anymore. Now they just let the bands write the record. When the record is done, they hand it over and then the marketing machine turns up.
That's right. And this is... If you go back to when Dream Theater jumped off whatever record label they were on and then went to
Roadrunner.
I think Warner.
They were at Roadrunner. They left. They left Roadrunner. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were on Warner and they finished up their thing there and they went to Roadrunner. And then Roadrunner was bought out by Warner.
Well, Roadrunner always was Warner. They always were.
No, there was something there, because I remember reading an article about it at the round about the same time that Systematic Chaos came out, where they were on Warner and then they joined Dream Theater, joined Warner, and like the week after they joined, they got bought out. I remember reading
that was like the East.
I
thought that was like the East West when they moved from one to the other.
No, I don't think so. But either which way, it's not really important for the tale of the story. The point is they moved to Roadrunner so that they had more artistic control. That was the whole point. And then when they moved from Roadrunner to Inside Out, it was the same deal. They wanted more artistic control. They wanted, you know, more, probably wanted a better pay, to be honest, as well. But I mean,
possibly more independence. Yeah. So yeah, real-time follow up here. Roadrunner was like an independent thing. Then in 2006, Warner Music Group bought a majority share in it.
There you go.
Then there was a big fight over their YouTube channel and the legal disputes. And then in 2010, Warner Music Group bought the whole lot.
That sounds about right.
And then in 2012, they made like big cutbacks on the worldwide operations. And that was pretty much where I think everybody left.
So, I mean, it's interesting, right, that's what happened there, because Roadrunner were realistically an independent that dealt specifically in metal. I mean, I think they still deal in metal. I think there's still quite a few
mostly,
people that are.
It's mostly a metal label now. All the prog guys have, all the prog guys left.
Yeah, that's right. So all the prog guys are gone and they've gone over to Inside Out. So, you know, I think it's really, really, really good that they're doing that.
I would love, to be honest, I'd love to be able to follow all this up with like Thomas Weber, get him on the show one day and talk about I don't know how much of this stuff he'd want to or be allowed to talk about with like two guys from Australia.
But yeah. So, I mean, look, yeah. I think it's at the end of the day, I think it's a good thing for the prog guys. Also one point I do want to make, and that is if you are in a band and you're starting to get some notoriety, do yourself a favor and get someone who knows how to do press and get them to do it for you. Unless you are a marketing guy, if you have a degree in communications or something like that and you've been doing it for a while, there are a lot of loopholes and there are a lot of things that can tie you up and can trip you up. And literally little things like grammatical errors, spelling mistakes, things not being written correctly will be the difference between getting in a published magazine or getting on the air and so on and so forth and not. So if you are listening to this and you are in a band and you don't have a press guy that does stuff for you and you are starting to, you know, get some more gigs and you're starting to get a bit of notoriety and all that sort of stuff, do yourself a favor and go and fucking get one. Or at the very least, get a consultation. It might cost you a couple of $100, all right? And they might say, you know what, you're doing everything fine. Just keep doing it for now. There's nothing we can help you with. But it's probably the best couple of $100 you'll spend.
The other thing I was going to say as well is that if you wish to, like, make sure you target if you're going to reach out to a publication, make sure you know what they do, like what sort of stuff they deal with. If they're mostly focused in like a broader Australian music thing, great, excellent. If I'm not going to name names here, but if, say, for sake of example, you're like a hip hop band sending stuff to a prog podcast, don't be so shocked when we don't turn around and look at it too closely.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Not going to name
really
names,
make sure you're targeting the places you know will probably write about you or speak about you in our case.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So anyway, I think that probably about wraps it up for the main topic. What do you think?
I think so.
All right. We should get onto these album reviews from
last
week.
Yes, we should. Alrighty, so the album that I gave you last week was a brand new record from a Brisbane-based band, Falling Forever by Chasm. What did you think about that? Oh, I've done it again, haven't I? I've given you a record you fucking hated, didn't I?
No, I didn't hate it. I really enjoyed the first track. Actually really enjoyed it. I was like, okay, so this is kind of like noise rock doomy kind of stuff, bit of sludge in there. This is really, really interesting. Okay, cool. And then the next track started and the whole album after that was basically just the first track on repeat.
Okay, so it's just stylistically the same sort of thing for an entire record.
Yeah, there wasn't anything that was like if you go from one, like if I played, jumbled the tracks up in order and went to like a minute 30 on each track, there was no way that you could tell me what track it was.
Right? Yeah.
Now, that being said, I recognize that that is a particular sound that a lot of people like. There is a particular market for that. There is a particular group of people who enjoy listening to that kind of stuff. And you know what? It's probably good to put on in the background while you're studying and all that kind of stuff, because it doesn't have those moments. It's a bit like, you know, chill hop stuff that you find on YouTube and everything like that, but for metalheads, because there's not really anything in there that's recognizable as, you know, favorite bits or bad bits or, you know, so on and so forth. But for me, would I go see these guys live? Yeah, I probably would. As a fan of bands like Sun and so on and so forth, then yeah, I think they would actually be really, really cool live. Would I necessarily sit down and listen to a whole album of this? Probably not.
Yeah, that's fair. I think. Like, yeah, there is a certain element of that that is interesting live, where it's just this like relentless wall of noise coming off the stage and different lighting and mooding and that sort of thing. But yeah, as a thing on a record, I can understand why it probably doesn't really hold.
Yeah. And it's not to say that it's bad, it's just not really my thing, you know.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but it was interesting, but just not interesting enough.
Yeah, fair enough.
So now I gave you The Maestro's Tale by What Strange Beasts. What'd you think?
Now, this reminded me of a record you sent to me some time ago for a review. Friends of the show, Great White Nothing, with their record. This record is also, incidentally, like a part one. I read some reviews where it sort of mentioned this is a part one. So, again, it'd be very interesting to see what happens in part two. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily musically similar to Great White Nothing, but stylistically. You know, again, the concept record is the debut record is bold, and follows a similar concept, you know, the hero's journey and contemplations on the human condition, to one of the bands that's almost become like a touchstone and like a pillar of this show, you know, thematic Skyrunner. It's like, I think it's like, you know, Dream Theater, Marillion, and thematic Skyrunner are almost something that we bring up at least one of those three things, or in this case of this episode, two of those three things. Actually, no, we've hit all three this episode, haven't we?
Yeah.
It really is a classic 9/8 podcast episode where we talk about Dream Theater. We have discussions around and then talk about Dream Theater, Marillion, and thematic Skyrunner.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that should be the new tagline of the show. Anyway, like, it's a cool record. It's a band to keep an eye on because there's very interesting stuff that they're doing there. Although this particular record took them 3 years to make, so I've no idea how long we're going to be waiting for the second one.
No, I agree with you. I think it's going to be very interesting to hear that next one.
Alrighty, so what have you got for me for the next episode?
Okay, for you this time round, I have a band called Castanark. They've just released about 2 weeks ago their latest album called The Sea of Broken Vows. Check that one out for me. Tell me what you think.
Alrighty. So the record that I have for you this time around is a record that's only been released a few days ago, but has been featuring very heavily on several shows that I listen to. Mm-hmm. So the record is called Where the Streets Lead, and it's from a Cardiff-based jazz band called Slowly Rolling Camera.
All right.
Have a listen to that and tell me what you think.
Will do. Will do. So, yeah, I think that about wraps it up for this episode of the 9-8 Podcast.
Yes, it does. If you would like to find the show notes for this episode, you can find them at the98podcast.fireside.fm/74. You can find us on Twitter at 98FM. You can find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/98FM. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, if you like what you hear and you want to hear some more stuff from us, consider supporting us on Patreon. You can find the link to that in the show notes. But until next time, Dave, thank you very much for listening.
Absolutely. And stay safe out there, guys. My name is Dave Ellis.
My name is Alex Hogg. Thank you very much. We'll see you later.